KTAX 1580 AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark at Arlington National Cemetery.
On your order.
Tomb of the Unknown Soldier on Memorial Day, where President Biden will lay a wreath and speak. The end of the holiday weekend means millions of people on the roads and in the skies, but the weather hampering some travel, says ABC's Alex Stone.
It's like Groundhog Day, where last week is the biggest crowds in history were flying on Thursday and Friday, heading out of town, according to TSA data. Today, they're all coming back. And again, LaGuardia and JFK airports in New York, along with Boston Logan and Newark Liberty, have the most canceled and delayed flights and are under threat of thunderstorms again. As the day goes on, cancellations are likely to grow because of the storm threat.
These storms have been deadly, responsible for at least 20 deaths across the country, nearly 700,000 power outages right now. And Japan briefly told people on the island of Okinawa to take cover because of a North Korean missile launch. That evacuation alert lifted. This is ABC News.
This news report is sponsored by Wisconsin Capital Management, LLC, serving their clients for 40 years. Visit wiscap.com.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The National Weather Service is in Rock County to survey severe weather damage from Sunday. The damage is to large trees, which could have been done by tornadoes. The Weather Service investigation will focus on Janesville and Milton. Tornadoes may have also touched down in Whitewater and Fort Atkinson Sunday. A lot of people are on their way home from the busiest Memorial Day weekend for travel since the pandemic. 3.5 million Americans flew somewhere.
Last year, the cancellation rate was at a 10-year low. This year, so far, it's actually even better than last year, but we want to make sure that it stays that way. We're pressing the airlines to do their part.
U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg speaking with WISN-TV's Up Front. This is Civic Media News.
Climate watchers predict this summer's temperatures may set records, which could aggravate some medical conditions. Terry D. reports.
Neurologist Dr. Ann Jones says when the body feels extreme heat and sweat evaporates, hypercoagulation or blood thickening occurs. This increases the chance for blood clots. Winter weather can also produce an instinctive response.
The cold makes us kind of react with our fight or flight kind of drive, and it makes our blood vessels close down or vasoconstrict, and that can raise blood pressure up, and that can predispose you to stroke.
The study indicates more research could identify the impact of temperature change on stroke as a way to address health inequalities, including the burning of fossil fuels, deforestation, and industrial processes. This is Terry D.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Benches emptied out in Boston. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers lost 2-1 Sunday to the Red Sox after winning the first two games of the series. But for whatever reason, Red Sox pitcher Chris Martin got upset. The Brewers tried back-to-back bunts in the seventh inning, and that emptied the dugouts. Jeff Levering on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
Here comes the Red Sox dugout. Here come the bullpen, and we got something on our hands at Fenway.
After the game, Brewers manager Pat Murphy asked, why did his players jump in on the dispute?
Well, that's not our first time.
No, that's not.
From what I understand, I think their pitcher showed some emotion, and our people thought it was directed at them. I don't know if it really was or wasn't. I'm not going to speculate what the kid was doing. Like I said to the umpiring crew that we've had before, and I said, hey, you're not surprised, are you?
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Cooler today with high temperatures only making it to the 60s. Some spots of sun will quickly be replaced with thickening clouds and showers and thunderstorm chances this afternoon and into the evening. And none are expected to be severe. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 62 degrees.
Tons of glass artists share the same passion for eye-catching art as Ignite Glass and Gifts, so we're showcasing their work alongside our talented local artists and our in-house Ignite artists. The latest techniques, the hottest colors, and mind-blowing designs are here for you to enjoy. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts. Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and Odana Road. Plus, IgniteGlassandGifts.com. Do your eyes a favor and see this stuff.
Wisconsin Capital Management in Madison is a registered investment advisory firm and has been serving their clients for the past 40 years. The firm is focused on providing investment advisory services to its affiliated mutual funds. Their approach to investment management is designed to provide competitive performance over the entire business cycle. Their clients rely on them to manage their assets through the fluctuations of market cycles, and they strive to outperform over the long term. For information, visit wiscap.com.
You're listening to Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
There it is, Busted Pencils Monday. Fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education right away. 855-752-4842. Just to remind people, Johnny Lupinacci, you know, yep. Sometimes I forget you're on, you know, if you're out there, you're driving in your car, you're like, I forgot the number. I want to call them tonight. Well, if you're going to call us tonight, make sure 855-752-4842. If you're watching on the Twitter feed, you can text us. If you're on the Facebook feed, if you're on the YouTube, man, there are so many ways to get
Civic
in touch
Media
with us.
App.
And I was going to say, Johnny, don't forget about the Civic Media app, because, you know, when you got the Civic Media app, all is well. As we said, our friends in Finland wouldn't go anywhere without the Civic Media app. You know, because Johnny's like,
oh, our school's hilarious, Tim. I was just chatting with a few of the Finnish teacher educators today. But also, you can chop it up and you can have these discussions, especially if you're in Madison. You can head down to the Minocqua Brewing Company and have these kinds of conversations. Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. And the last time I was in town, I got to actually be in person with one of our regular guests here with us tonight. But Tim, give us an introduction.
It's a Monday. It's the third Monday. That's Wisconsin Public Education Network. It is their regular time. Always leading the pack, Heather Dubois-Bernays. She's there making sure, but she brought a special guest today. We're going to talk about this. I just want to, you know, hey, we are going to delve deep into critical issues facing public education. Tonight, we are focusing on the dire financial straits of Wisconsin public schools. Despite an increase in state funding, districts grapple with significant budget cuts leading to painful cuts. Our guest is Christopher Saldana, an assistant professor of K-12 education, leadership, and policy analysis at UW-Wisconsin-Madison, whose research sheds light on the intricate relationship between school finance and educational opportunity. Chris, Heather, welcome to Busted Pencils. How are you both? Chris, you first.
I'm good. Thanks for having me. It's really exciting to get to talk about these issues that I think are super important to educate kids.
And Heather, we're going to let you. Are you going to lament this being a Monday, or are you going to come on and go like, I got this Monday, Tim?
It is a Monday, but we got this. I'm really glad that Chris is here to join us tonight. I'm excited to dig into some of the many reasons why it's necessary for us to have a regular slot on this show, because there is just so much going on with Wisconsin public schools. And Tim, I got to fact check you right out of the gate. We didn't really get an increase to school funding in Wisconsin. Because for the 16th year in a row, we don't even have a budget that keeps pace with inflation. And even though more dollars went in, so much of that went to private and charter schools that public schools are just left with the crumbs like usual. Mm. And I'm just going to like drive this point home. But if it doesn't keep pace with inflation, it's not an increase, it's a cut. So let's call it what it is.
Thank you, Heather. That's why you're on the show every third Monday to make sure the fact check me, because, you know, I play loose with the facts. That's what we do here. No, we don't. But you
that's
know,
what I we wanna... do when we turn it over to AI and Tim gets the reins.
No. Because the technicality, though, is what I put out there is true. What Heather's pointing out, though, which is the reason for why we are having another show like this tonight and having a guest like Christopher Saldana is because school finance is murky, is weird. We don't know. Somebody tells us one day we're going for cuts. The next day somebody says it's the historic investment ever that has ever been given by any state at any time. And my neighbor, going to talk about it, my neighbor has had it, does not know what they're voting for, never understands whether or not they should be voting yes or no. They don't understand why they have to vote yes or no, because every month they pay their taxes the way they're supposed to. All of this, Chris, okay, public education, school finance 101, as best you can. How do we get to the point, how do we fund public schools? And let's just say we're in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, a student goes to public schools. The average, we typically talk about this, how much it costs to educate a student in the year, okay? And we hear a certain number. That number, where does that money come from? How do we get there?
That's a great question. So part of the way that schools are funded, there are three streams usually, and I'll try to make this as simple as possible. And I know we only got an hour, so I won't take you a lot.
Well, my neighbor's going to not listen unless you get to it, Chris, because he's got stuff to do, man.
That's right. Historically, schools have been funded by local property taxes. So that's where the vast inequity comes from, is the fact that we have such great differences in the wealth that exists in different communities. Over the course of time, states and the federal government have started to chip in, but they have not chipped in anywhere near where they need to get to the point of offering every kid anywhere in this country the opportunities that they should be afforded. What often happens is that kids who live in wealthy communities, who have wealthy parents, they get all of the educational opportunities that they need. They get the tutoring. They get the access to technology. They get the access to the highest, the most experienced and the highest qualified teachers. It's the students who live in the communities where poverty and racism is most concentrated that have the fewest opportunities. And those communities also have the least wealth. Mm. So when we place the burden on these communities to try to raise funds for their students' educations, there's only so much that they can do. And so when Heather talks about what the state's role is in educating students and funding public schools, it really is to provide that additional level of funding that will allow communities that don't have access to the wealth that other communities do to do things like hire experienced teachers that are qualified to hire counselors.
Let me ask this question, Chris, right there. If we're going to think about it in pots of money, so local taxes, what you're saying, and so I have $100,000 house, a percentage of my house is then thrown into the local public schooling. And so then what you're talking about then the number of houses in a district and the wealth of those houses then calculates into that's the local contribution then. And so I think the way you explained that then, Chris, is to say, and so you can imagine in communities that have big million-dollar mansions and in communities that might have very low home ownership, then the local contribution is wildly different. Yes. Wildly different.
Yes. And if you think about the percentage of a million-dollar home, the wealthiest communities can tax themselves at much lower rates. They don't have to have these exorbitant tax rates to be able to fund public schools. They can have very low tax rates and do much more than communities that have that have less wealth, they have to tax themselves more, and they can't even get anywhere near what the wealthy communities have.
Okay. Yeah, just want to get that just so we understand. And so that right away then, as you said, is that it's a disparity right off the bat because we're basing that. Okay. Okay. Now, what are you talking about the state? And Heather's, you know, always whining about the state not doing the work they're supposed to do. Heather, I'm sorry.
So there's no lie there. I'm always whining about that. 24/7. It's all I whine about.
I think maybe the best way to talk about the state's role is to give you a hypothetical example. You have three different school districts. One school district is very poor, and they are contributing to their local schools through local property taxes, but they can't get to the amount of money that they would need to be able to educate kids in the way that the state requires, right? The state imposes on every single school district within it some expectations, some standards. They say you have to educate your kids, and they have to be able to pass, in our current system, standardized test scores, and they have to be able to meet these standards. So this very poor school district puts in some money from the example that we talked about. Taxpayers are paying there, but they can't raise enough. And then you have on the other side of the spectrum, a very wealthy school district that doesn't need any help whatsoever. They have enough money in their local community to put in all of the dollars that they need to provide all of the resources that their kids need so that their kids can meet all of the expectations that are placed upon them by the state. And then you have maybe one district that's somewhere in between, right? They can kind of get close to the bar in terms of the amount of money that they would need to provide the kinds of resources that they need for their kids. What the state's role is thought of today in terms of policy is that the state is supposed to provide to fill the gap, right? We talked about the low income district. They couldn't make it all the way to the amount of money that they would need to meet the state's standards. And so the state comes in and fills in whatever money the local community isn't able to raise. And that's kind of their role. They're supposed to provide that additional funding, and they're supposed to be consistent over the course of time, right? This is a constitutional standard. Every state within the United States has within their constitution some provision that says we need to provide kids with this standard of education. And then with that, they have to meet it. The problem is that in order for us as citizens to find out whether the state is meeting it, it involves litigation, it involves constant checks, right? We can kind of do the eye test and we can say our kids aren't doing well, what's going on? And then everyone starts to point fingers. And I teach a resource allocation class, and I don't know if you've ever seen the Spider-Man meme where all the Spider-Men are pointing at each other, right? That's the kind of stuff that happens in public education, is that everybody starts pointing fingers at everyone. But really, it is the state's constitutional responsibility to provide public education for every kid within its borders, right? Wherever those kids come from, whatever languages those kids speak, whatever disabilities they may have, whatever their socioeconomic status may be, the state has made a promise, a commitment, that they will provide public education at a high quality and so that it's free for every kid within its state.
It's Busted Pencils Fully Leaded Education Talk, Wisconsin Public Education Network, third Monday. And our guest, of course, Heather is here, and Dr. Chris Saldana, University of Wisconsin-Madison, helping us figure this out because, man, my neighbor came in and said, Tim, when you get the show going tonight, make sure he helps explain what's coming out of my pocket and what needs to go. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Hey, if you have a question, give us a call. Make sure you understand. We want to know. Busted Pencils, School Finance 101 when we get back.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
The John and Gordy Show.
We got fired a lot of times for different reasons.
Oh, nice.
And we got fired so many times, it was the only press that we were able to get in this town. And one of the stories had us pictured on the cover
Wow. And so we did that. We did a little interview. Paper came out on a Sunday. We got fired the next day.
Tune in while you still can. Weekday mornings 6 until 8 on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
One of the most prolific columnists in the Midwest. Mr. James Causey, one of your columns, you mentioned that you got into the news because of the news quiz.
Yes. I would like to be the first person picked. And so.
Yes. Getting picked first for the news quiz teams.
We need to bring that back, actually. I need to talk to my paper about bringing that back.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays at 2 on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app.
Mad Radio WMDX, Madison's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Conversation work.
You hear us coming back. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking. Education, the numbers 855-752-4842. School Finance 101, Wisconsin Public Education Network. Heather, she's here, and special guest, Dr. Chris Saldana, University of Wisconsin, Madison, assistant professor at leadership, talking to us, helping us get through this whole thing, school financing, so we can really get to, quote, the facts. We were messing around in there. Heather was saying, you know, don't let the facts get in the way of the truth, putting it out there going, okay, is it a historic investment? Is it actually an underfunding? And we got to get at this to truly understand. And I said, you know, my neighbor, we talk about this. You all have a neighbor who's trying to figure this out and wanting to know, you know, and especially the neighbor who's going like, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. I love my public schools. I want to make sure that things are happening. So Chris, you were talking about saying, okay, so right away, my neighbor who owns real estate is paying a percentage of that part, and that goes to their contribution. And then, but the number that we're trying to get to, though, as you're saying, is set by a bar of an expectation of saying, here's what a great education in Wisconsin should look like, and then here's how much it will cost. Then based on how much it will cost, taxpayers, here's how much you got it to, and then when it doesn't get to the full amount, the state's responsibility, let's not even call it a responsibility, the reality, the law, the Constitution says, state, you come in and fill in the rest if we don't get there, because every student, every child in the state of Wisconsin, according to the Constitution that you all legislators are holding up and enforcing, is that yours to make up the difference. Okay. And then, Chris, does it ever happen that the legislature doesn't live up to their promise?
Once in a while. Yeah. Okay. I think more often than not, that's usually.
Oh,
and it's interesting because we're talking about Wisconsin, but this is really a national problem.
Yeah.
States all around the country, they try to avoid this issue of funding public schools. They constantly do it over and over and over. And I think Heather mentioned this at the very beginning, the cost of public education has skyrocketed. Mm. And this is because we now do a better job, for example, of educating kids. That's just one aspect of it. But we now also do a better job of identifying kids with disabilities, right? In the fact where we didn't, and we serve them better. We now do a better job of serving kids who don't speak English. We provide them with greater programs and resources. And the thing that I think folks who criticize how much schools spend often neglect is that schools are a human-centered organization and institution, right? We need people in schools to educate kids. And it just so happens that paying personnel is expensive, right? You can't put in a machine or a computer to create and foster the kind of learning environments that skilled teachers can create. So it's just one of those things that is continuing to rise in costs, and that funder or that the state funding mechanisms haven't kept pace with.
Johnny Lupinacci, jump in there.
I love being here as a listener, as a learner, as somebody, you know, cheering this on, because I couldn't agree more with you know, always what Heather's bringing to the show, but also Dr. Saldana tonight. What a great guest we have for our listener out there who's like, hold on, wait, it's a constitutional responsibility for states to fund schools? But then I keep hearing about all these underfunded schools. So now if I'm listening and you know, I'm rehashing this, because in our world, we experience this, like Dr. Saldana said, we experience this state to state, right? We're constantly negotiating and too often begging for crumbs. And I think one of the last shows, Heather reminded us, like, let's stop asking for the bare minimum, because it's just not enough. When we know we can do better, we ought to be funded and able to do better for all the children in our public schools. That's the function of a strong public school system, and it's the bedrock of a strong democracy. It is the strength of our nation to have all of our young people learning and learning well, to be all the diverse things they're going to grow up to be and contribute to our local economies and to our national identity. And yes, our national identity is a diverse one, right? And so having Dr. Saldana here explaining it and breaking it down, but also knowing his work, that it advocates for this kind of equity in education, right? And I'm coming back to this. It's a constitutional responsibility of a state to provide a quality and equitable education to all children, and that's not inexpensive, but that keeps getting farmed out. Like, states keep somehow getting to shirk out of funding that. And it's beyond frustrating, right? We're all pretty frustrated with it, fed up with it. But listener out there, you know, it likely then falls to you, right? It already is our responsibility in a democracy to contribute to the tax good of our states and our nation. And that those tax dollars then get dispersed, right, equitably, ideally. And we've seen too often not. School funding has not historically been fair or equitable. But in a perfect world, right, our state budget adequately funds our public schools, and those dollars come from, you know, a tax base. And it's a little bit more diverse than just individual tax on our, you know, on our state income or our sales tax, but I'm simplifying it. But yet there's been a historical shift and a move, right? To say, let's move away from the state funding it as much. In fact, they've reduced how much they've given percentage wise, and then put it on local communities to say, well, if you want good, strong public schools, it's up to you. And I think that's been divisive. And Tim, I think when you talk about your neighbor, that's where your neighbor is like, wait, what, aren't I already paying taxes?
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that. Like, our state should be holding up its constitutional end, but yet they've kind of shirked out of that and shifted attention to individuals and saying, well, you know what, if you want your schools to be strong, it's up to you. So we'll put you in this position to sort of ask for money locally.
I think there's two major policy changes that the state has made that are directly related to public education. One is, all have already mentioned it, the shift towards school choice,
yep,
the voucher movement. One thing that state policymakers have tried to do is to say, we aren't going to adequately fund your public schools, but we'll give you a choice. And if you want to exit them, then here you go. Here's your ticket to be able to get out of public schools. And then the other thing, Johnny, when you're talking about the tax structures, right? Even when you think about the nature of state taxes and the nature of local taxes, we've talked a lot about property taxes. State taxes are usually funded in more progressive ways, right? Things like income taxes, right? It's usually the most wealthiest folks in a state that are contributing to the money that's going to the state that then gets redistributed to communities around the state. So in both instances, the state has just shirked its responsibility and just made it so that those with the least resources are being asked to do the most. Tim, you talk about your neighbor. It's true. They're paying their taxes. And then at the same time, they're being asked to do even more. And even in the gaps that they're filling with these referendum, this isn't getting kids to the kinds of education that they deserve. This is barely meeting minimums. Adequate is a baseline. It's not even close to what we want.
Man, Heather, where'd you find this guy, man? He's coming in here. Wisconsin Public Education Network Monday. Dr. Chris Saldana. Yeah, Heather, Du Bois Renee, bringing in a guest. Heather, we're going to get, you know, for there, get to you, because you got some explaining to do where you found this guy here. But I tell you what, I can hear it in the background. I hear that. I know the music's going to say something about it. I don't want to be here anymore. We want you to be here more, though. More when we get back. Dr. Chris Saldana, we want you to be back. We want you to be here way more. See you in a minute.
You're listening to Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A Republican member of the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents says he plans to stay on even though his term has expired. Scott Walker appointed Bob Atwell in 2017. State Supreme Court ruled 2 years ago that appointees can keep serving until the state Senate confirms their successors. The Biden administration is expanding health coverage to children of immigrants in the DACA program. DACA participants in the U.S. are three times more likely than the general population to be uninsured. Aline Yuriko Badillo Carrillo is in the DACA program.
Not just for me, but I think it's a communal benefit. If I have access to medical care, then I'll be able to be healthier, and then I'll be able to help others.
Badillo Carrillo says immigrants and their families work many jobs vital to the economy. This is Civic Media News.
Common eating disorders like bulimia and anorexia are showing up more often now in young people who play sports. Eric Tegedoff reports.
Common eating disorders like bulimia and anorexia nervosa are showing up more often in young people, especially those who play sports. Dr. Susanna Block is a pediatric hospitalist.
If the sports environment starts to focus too much on performance or weight, that can really lead to an unhealthy situation for these teen athletes. So our goal is to help our kids get the benefits from sports without putting too much stress to promote eating disorders.
She acknowledges that some sports focus heavily on weight, such as boxing and wrestling, where athletes are designated by weight category. Other, more aesthetic sports, like gymnastics and diving, also have a focus on weight. Block says the unfortunate irony is that eating disorders ultimately lead to poor athletic performance. I'm Eric Tegedoff.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Morgan Spurlock, who lampooned the fast food industry with his documentary Supersize Me, has passed away. Yahoo Entertainment reports the Academy Award nominee died due to complications from cancer. Spurlock showed the effects that an all-fast food diet had on his body and mind. He was 53. Let's stick with gluttony. All great competitors should know when to step down. Such is the case with competitive eater Kobayashi, who claims in his career that he has eaten over 10,000 hot dogs. I actually thought that would be more. Kobayashi once consumed 50 hot dogs in 12 minutes, shattering the previous record of 25 1/8 hot dogs in the same amount of time. The athlete says after eating competitively, two words that should never be used together under any circumstances, for decades, he has no appetite. The moral of the story? If you cram as much food as you can into your pie hole for two decades, you'll eventually lose your appetite. And that's a great way to keep the weight off. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Evening showers and storms, then partly cloudy and low 50s overnight. Some sun to start tomorrow, then some afternoon showers once again, highs in the mid-60s. Sunny and around 70 Wednesday. Thursday highs warm to the low 70s, chance of rain as well. Currently, it's 66.
This Memorial Day, take time to recognize those members of the armed forces who've served and sacrificed in defending freedom. In the words of Emily Potter, heroes never die. They live on in the hearts and minds of those who would follow in their footsteps. This tribute is brought to you by Castlecade Arcade, where you can book your next birthday, graduation, or special event at either location in Madison East and Westtown Mall. For arcade locations, visit Castlecade Arcade online at allcastlegames.com.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast form? Search no more. Find it now on the WMDX website at mad.radio. Your news just for the Madison area. I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Busted pencils, fully leaded. Education talk, educated educators talking education. And yes, it's Wisconsin Public Education Network Monday. Heather, where did you find this guy, this Dr. Saldana? Come on, let us in on the secret. Where did you get him?
Yeah, I'd love to. I was just hanging out in a Zoom with a bunch of policy nerds like I do. And Dr. Saldana was invited to talk to us about the topic of adequacy in Wisconsin school finance. And I thought, oh, okay, here we go. You know, I was prepared for a bracing round of hearing the facts and getting bored out of my mind for an hour and then walking away. And he just brought the issue to light with such clarity and focus that I immediately followed up with a request if he could do a public version of the presentation that he made to that group, because we're always looking for someone who can get out of those weeds and into the heart of the matter and like explain, well, what does this mean for kids? What does this mean for communities? How does a disequalizing school finance structure actually impact the way we live our lives? And I just recognized right away that he had a really rare gift for explaining that in a way that makes sense to your neighbor, Tim, who's always, you know, blaming the wrong person and pointing.
They're so cranky. Yeah, my neighbor's so cranky sometimes. I mean, you know, but that's why, yeah. So, Chris, Dr. Saldana, all right. So I think we're getting to the point where we understand taxes, real estate taxes, how that works and contributes to a number that we're supposed to get to, because that number that we're supposed to get to is driven by a standard that we set by saying, here's what we want from all kids, and here's the success level that we want from all kids in the state. And it's going to probably cost about this amount of money to get there, because we've decided that this is where we want to get to. And so I pay some real estate taxes, and then the state's responsibility. And that word responsibility makes it sound like, well, you know, they're very irresponsible. They're very irresponsible. How about no, you're breaking the law? You're breaking the law. You're not irresponsible, okay? You're irresponsible when you don't put out the garbage the night before. You're irresponsible when you don't fill the sugar for the next morning for your mom when they're coming down to have coffee. You're breaking the law when you don't fund schools the way the Constitution of your state in Wisconsin says you're supposed to do. When that happens, then, Chris, we talk about this. And when the state breaks the law, is that then what triggers a referendum? Sometimes,
yes. Okay. And so part of what happens in Wisconsin is that many, many years ago, I think this was in the early 90s, we talked about how the costs of schools were rising, right? Teachers needed to be paid more because things were getting more expensive. Schools recognized that they needed to have more counselors, they needed to have more paraprofessionals. So the costs of schools were rising, and state legislators in the 1990s decided that they needed to do something about these rising costs, right? One way to think about them is, yes, this is good. We're doing better by our kids. Another way to think of them, which is the way that the state legislators thought about it in the 1990s, is that our schools are spending, and their spending is out of control. Right. And so they implemented this new law, this new policy called revenue limits. And what revenue limits are, they capped how much school districts could spend or how much revenue they could receive. It's essentially a spending cap, though. And that spending cap decides how much state funding and local funding school districts can receive. And so what referenda are is a request on the part of communities, of local communities, to say, of school districts, sorry, asking their communities, can we spend a little bit more than what our revenue limit is? Right. They are going to their communities, their voters, and begging to spend a little bit more because the amount of funding that they're getting currently isn't sufficient to meet the needs of their kids.
Begging to raise taxes on ourselves. so that our kids have what they need. I mean, how desperate does it get? I mean, it's the most unethical way to do school finance. It really is.
Heather, and this is why, again, for Dr. Saldana to be on tonight is to help people understand too that why this does happen. And it feels like too on this one, it's like, okay, so man, it's back to us to make sure that the kids get what they need, because the legislature and the legislators have decided to do this by some kind of goofy kind of magic that they do, and then they turn it into, well, the schools are just out there drunk and spending like sailors, you know, out there. And no, nothing's, that's BS, you know. And we sit there, and then you sit down though, and I can see though too that you take the point of view. So going back all the way back to where you started, Chris, then in wealthy districts, right, the ability then to tax themselves more or to put more in doesn't always happen, but they're much more able to. And then when you go to a community that's already putting in all as much as they can and you're asking them for more, kind of when we had Say Yes to MPS, the Milwaukee Public Schools, people, and that too was just to provide funding for the essentials, nothing extra, but yet to fund the essentials, it still had to go back to the taxpayers to say to themselves, yes, we want to tax ourselves more because the legislature won't do their job.
That's exactly right. And I think there's one other thing that I think I should point out when we're talking about revenue limits and referenda is that many listeners will remember the Great Recession, the financial crisis that happened during 2008, 2009, and 2010. What the state legislators did during that period was to what's called decouple. So they removed this requirement that the revenue limits increase by the rate of inflation. And so that already, the amount of funding that states were going to, or that the state was going to put into public education, is already decoupled from what the actual needs are. So the costs have been rising, everything has been getting more expensive, and the state just hasn't contributed its part. And then when we think about districts, I think, Tim, the point that you made is a really important one to make, is that districts are different, right? Mm-hmm. And the state can say, well, it's up to you. You can decide if you want to spend more on public education, but some communities just don't have that wealth that they can just pull on. It's not like they live in the McMansions where someone can just pay a little bit more and it's not so much out of their pocket and then they're going to fund great schools. These are folks who, like your neighbor or like other folks around Wisconsin, are already doing their part and paying a huge amount out of their wallet. And then in many occasions saying, yes, I will pay even more to provide the funding that my schools need. But it really isn't a sustainable approach to funding public education. We really do need to have structures and systems in place that are going to provide state funding for public education.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, Dr. Saldana and Heather, both for this. Maybe you can speak to this. So where do we go from here? Like, what's the move? Because I'm sure a listener is probably like, man, I get it. This is clear. Yeah. What do we do about this?
I'm going to defer to Heather because I know that is
doing a lot. I'd love to take this one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, while we're pointing fingers at the state, let's just trace them all the way to the ballot box. We have the opportunity this summer, this fall, to go to the ballot box to vote on those school referenda, to provide a stopgap solution, you know, put a Band-Aid on this bleeding wound for the districts that we live in. But we also have an opportunity to elect better leaders and people who are going to take that constitutional charge that they pledge when they take office more seriously and do right by our kids. And I don't care what letter they have behind their name, all of our elected officials need to prioritize that constitutional responsibility to making sure that our schools are providing an education that is as uniform as it can be across all of our schools. And right now, the entire system is set up to prevent that uniformity. The revenue limits are nuts. They don't correspond to student need either. You know, they were arbitrarily set 30 years ago, and they need to be revisited. We don't want to preserve that for the next 400 years. We want to fix this now. And our kids are only going to be kids right now, right? We time is not on our side and we have to move fast. So I encourage people to make an informed decision when they vote, but also to get involved locally. find out why your district is going to referenda. Join a local group like the ones that work together through our network across the state, and do what you can to educate communities, explain how this works to people, because it's very confusing. But most of all, just put your votes where your passion is, and do what's right for kids yourselves when you go to vote.
Man, thank you, Heather, for putting that out there like that. And you say, yeah, we do, you know, people have a choice. And the big choice that you point out here is at the ballot box. And you say not vote. I mean, the referendum is a choice at the ballot box, but the ballot box of going, okay, like, does your legislator, yours, your communities, do they follow the law? Do they uphold the law, or do they break the law? Because if they're breaking the law, guess what? You have a choice to get them out of there, move them along, say, sorry. At a minimum, we have a minimum requirement here when we vote for legislators. And one of the minimum requirements are that they uphold the law. And so there, legislators out there across Wisconsin, across the country, if you're not doing your job in enforcing the law, making sure that the law is followed, if you are, you know, breaking the law, hey, oh, breaking the law, man, a little Judas Priest there, right? Yeah. You know, a little Dayton, breaking the law. It's just, hey, vote them out, man, because, and then this whole referendum talk maybe could be a whole different conversation, because the reality is that the reason we go to referendum, again, comes back to these legislators and the system they've set up. And Chris, right, you were talking about, we've got a system problem.
Yeah, I think Heather said it perfectly. Referenda are a Band-Aid, right? And this is a big, big wound. And referenda are a tiny little Band-Aid that kind of cover up this wound, when really what we need to be thinking about is how do we provide more funding for kids who are learning English, emerging bilinguals, which the state does horribly. The state provides so little funding for kids who are learning English. The state provides so little funding for kids with disabilities and special education. I think that's one of the biggest problems, that if you ask school district administrators now, superintendents, principals, when you ask them what the biggest challenge is that they don't get enough funding from the state. And so now they're having to subsidize their own special education funding, or their own special education programs, which are programs that are federally required and state mandated, right? And they should be, right? We should be providing public education for kids with disabilities, but they now are pulling from kids in general education classrooms to provide for kids in special education. So that's how bad it's gotten, is that districts are pulling from every which way that they can to try to make do and provide for kids in their schools. And the sad part is that they're unable to do it, and it's for all kids, right? It's not just any particular kid within these school districts that are in the districts with the greatest needs. All of those kids within those school districts are having educational opportunities robbed from them.
Busted pencils. Holy leaded education talk. 855-752-4842 is the number. Wisconsin Public Education Network Monday. Heather Dubois-Bernain, Dr. Chris Saldana, University of Wisconsin-Madison. Heather, I'm listening. My neighbor has just sent me a note saying, I need to find out more information. Where do I go?
You can go to wisconsinnetwork.org to find out more about all of this. Get links to the information you need to understand how school finance works. Look at our map and find the public education advocacy group nearest you and send them a note, join them, connect, get involved, get engaged. We also want to invite folks to join us this summer, July 30 to 31st, at our annual summer summit, where we're going to be bringing folks together from across the state who are sick and tired of being sick and tired of this and ready to do something about it. And we hope that Dr. Saldana will join us there too, and that you all can ask him your questions in person and find out what it's really going to take to move the dial on this, because it's going to take a lot more than, you know, just a few people understanding the problem. The problem isn't that we don't know what's wrong. The problem is there isn't the will to do what's right. And we can fix that. We can fix that immediately if we could force the will to.
Man, check it out though. So in July, make sure everybody is heading out to the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Chris, Heather, thank you so much for busting pencils with us tonight. And yeah, you hear it. know your rights, everybody. Johnny and Tim, when we get back.
You're listening to Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
Did you know Broadfest, the annual Memorial Day weekend event in Madison, is more than 40 years old? The Metcalf family set up a brat tent in their grocery store parking lot to sell some brats to customers. That was 1983. The brat sales support local charities. Now can you guess the total amount raised? We'll have the answer coming up. These days, along with brats, there's something for everyone, including free music. Here's Michael Alexander.
75 bands from all over the country, and roughly 150,000 of our closest and dearest friends each year.
So did you guess? 4 million brats over more than 40 years equals $2.5 million going back into the community to support more than 120 nonprofits. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, home of the John and Gordy Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number is 855-752-4842. Wisconsin Public Education Network Monday. Super guest there, Johnny, Dr. Chris Saldana. I mean, just really able to take this whole school finance thing, which really is something that can be really weedy and really murky when you get into it and can really turn people off. You know, we say we always talk about my neighbor, but because you know what? There are people out there that need to understand this. And so often when it comes to understanding things related to finance, I think what happens too is that because of the complication, right, people then intentionally make it sound almost like you can't really understand this. And so therefore, as we started the show, Heather's like, you know, when I say a historic, you know, upward investment, well, the reality is, no, that's not really true. Tim, that depends on who's writing this. It shouldn't have to depend on how you put the facts out there to get to the truth. The facts should be the truth. The reality around school financing, what we're hearing here is that, man, we're not really talking about the truth, but what Dr. Saldana did for us is really help and say, okay, wait, truth. Real estate taxes, property taxes, we pay for those, sure. There's a certain amount of money, though, that we can give. You know, you have a $100,000 house, you have a $1 million house, figure it out. And then the state says, we want to educate all kids. We want to educate all students with learning difficulties, all students with different disabilities, all students, despite regardless of what their parents bring to the table. And then we set a standard and then we say, okay, this is how much money it's going to cost. And then state, it's the law for you to fill in the gap that's missing there. And what we're hearing is that, you know, so when you hear referendums, no, the state didn't do their job. They broke the law. The state broke the law and didn't follow the Constitution.
Yeah, Tim, and it's great that our guests and I pointed out schools are backed into a corner. Referendums are, I like that Heather said, you know, they're Band-Aid on a fatal bleeding wound. And so, you know, here we are, we're a school or we're a district that we don't have the budget or the money to keep schools open, to keep schools even adequate, not excellent, but adequate. And so referendums become an imperative to just get by. And that's being backed into a corner. And I like what they both said when I asked them what the move was, right? So listener out there, let's recap that. It's legislative. It's advocating not only do we need to vote for these referendums as a short-term fix, but we need to hold our legislators accountable to actually supporting public schools, right? To them having a legitimate long-term plan that upholds what Chris, you know, Dr. Saldana shared today with us, which is important, is it's constitutional law in the state. But think about it like this. It's a promise. Right. And in democracy, trust is a core democratic value. And we ought to be able to trust our government. And so it is up to us as voters and the, you know, the public to hold our legislators accountable to being trustworthy, especially when it comes to education. That is a nonpartisan issue. Whether you identify as a Republican or a Democrat or somewhere in between, you know, we all ought to land on, hey, these are public schools. This is an absolute essential. This is a baseline. Let's fund them adequately at the state level so we don't have to parse this out and fight about it, where those who are in the position to not be able to give the most are asked the most. It's absolutely, you know, as someone, a guest last Monday said, she was talking about assessment backwards. I'll borrow from her in that first three letters of that first word, assessment backwards, right? So, it, you know, it really doesn't fit in well. And I like that they reminded us we need short-term support and long-term plan. And so, listener out there, that's really important. The other thing that I thought was really helpful is they pointed us to where, as a listener, if I'm vibing with this, something, this is really clear. How do I help? Well, if you're not in Wisconsin, you know, if you're in Wisconsin, connect with the Wisconsin Public Education Network, WPEN. But there is a national organization, right, for public education, right? And we, you know, they have a great resource within their materials about, you know, the NPE.
The network. The
National Public Education, Network for Public Education. And they have a local, state, and national grassroots education network on their website. You can find your state. You can click on it. You can see the organizations doing the kind of work like our guest Heather was doing and that Dr. Saldana spoke to tonight. But if you're in Madison, Tim, you can head down to the Minocqua Brewing Company and you can...
You know what? You can get your beer there. You know why, Johnny? Because Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. Grab a beer, sit down there, and put together a game plan while you're at the Minocqua Brewery about saying how we're going to get out the vote here to the reality of saying, like, yeah, Johnny, the responsibility in a democracy then is if the people who are supposed to represent you, your group, okay, remember, we live in a representative democracy. The reality here then is that people are supposed to represent the sense of the people who elected them. When that doesn't happen, the people that elected them then get to go back and say, sorry, you're out. We're putting someone back in. And what a great place to do that at the Minocqua Brewing Company's tap room in Madison. You can get together, you can organize groups, and then go out and do a little bit of knocking on the door. Get that vote out because, look, we're talking about truly upholding the law. Johnny, you pointed out, and this not just in Wisconsin, in every state, public education is a constitutional absolute. It's not a negotiable. It has nothing to do with whether you want to or not. It is the law. Okay. And yeah, with
don't
that
be a promise breaker. Don't be a promise breaker. So that's that simple. You make a promise, and whether you made that promise individually or collectively by joining the government, right? Because it is constitutional. So when you take that oath to represent whatever district or wherever you're elected to be a representative of, you've taken on that responsibility to advocate for public education. So don't be a promise breaker, right? So legislators, don't be promise breakers. Folks out there, listener, don't vote for a promise breaker. Demand action, right? Fully leaded education talk, Busted Pencils. It's Monday. We got a great week ahead of us. Tim, it's good to chop it up with you tonight.
I always love being here, Johnny Lupinacci. Yeah, man. Trending news Tuesday, Educators Amplified Wednesday. A special guest from Idaho on Thursday. Yeah,
Idaho.
Bring your baked potato with you on Thursday. See y'all tomorrow night.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, home of the John and Gordy Show.
Is your computer so slow you can hardly use it? Does it have blue screens, malware, viruses, reboots, hardware crashes?
Sound familiar? Computers will have problems, and when they do, you need the computer experts at Madison Computer Works. Every day, we help home users and businesses keep their computers and networks running smoothly. For solutions to your computer problems, call the pros at 231-8000, and we'll turn this into this. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. You're listening to Mad Radio. WMDX 1580 AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.